basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and plenty to talk about. Today is option day, both in terms of team options and player options. Also, the date that Bronny's contract is set to become guaranteed. It's a partial guarantee of $1.2 million for next year, but that'd go up by about $1 million if the Lakers don't waive him today. So that's something to keep an eye on. We've already gotten the news that DeAndre Ayton has opted in. We've also gotten some reports that Marcus Smart might be headed to Houston. We'll talk about that a bit. And D, that actually leads into our kind of overall topic today is we've done a good amount of hand-wringing, rightfully so, about the big man spot and how that's going to be resolved. But we haven't talked as much about the other two starting spots. And the way that I look at this is, who is the guard that starts next to Austin, and who is the forward that starts next to Luka? Obviously, there are guards on the offensive end of the floor, but I view this very much through a defensive lens of whoever that guy playing next to both of those guys is going to have probably more defensive responsibility than either player does ideally. And Marcus on the way out is a step in the wrong direction in that respect, D. But again, this is the summer that they've had circled to really reshape the roster. We've gotten some reports of possible machinations of Bron and even AD going to the Warriors, and we don't know what's going to happen with Bron. But more broadly speaking, on that topic of the starters who are not that five spot, how do you view this idea of the guy who starts next to Austin and the guy who starts next to Luka?
This is a much wider range of a discussion, I think, than the big man spot, Pete. I know that you and I have gone back and forth on the bigs, but I think both of us are pretty aligned in the fact that defense needs to be pretty high up on the reliable skills that the center has. I would love for that to be true for the guy that's on the wing as well, but I'm not all the way there where I'm just like, this guy's got to be some defensive monster who is defense first. Maybe you disagree with that idea, but I just think the NBA is too versatile and too fluid on the wing to get caught up thinking this guy has to be one thing or the other in any huge direction. I'm way more looking for a guy who's really good on defense, but whose floor on offense is a lot higher than even a player like Marcus Smart, even though Smart's diversity as a, I can handle the ball some, I can shoot some, I can run a pick and roll some, jack of all trades enough that I feel like his floor is high enough, even if his shooting floor is not. Mm-hmm. But I want a guy who's good enough on offense too, Pete. And if we flip the idea around where this guy's good on offense, he's got to have A, defensive tools, and he has to have at least a history of showing that he can compete on that end of the floor and that he will compete. He doesn't need to be he's flirting with all defense level team. I'd love that guy. Those guys make $40 million
yes,
a
of course.
Year, Pete. So my standards are a bit lower in this regard.
And there are a couple of guys in the 30-ish million dollar range that I think are potential options. But question for you on the type that you're looking for, how important is athleticism within this? Because I think one of the more compelling arguments against Marcus, who I want to keep and don't want to see him walk, but if you go Austin, Marcus, Luka, perimeter-wise, you are very much behind athletically of everybody. So that player that sort of slots between them, do you think they need to be an athlete?
I think they need to be a better athlete than current Marcus.
Okay. Which isn't a super high bar for NBA standards. Yeah.
It's not a high bar, but Marcus is a good athlete whose strength and short area quickness and anticipation all make him out to be someone who can hang on the court in pretty much any environment where I feel like he's going to have a matchup that he's going to be okay with. But he's not a leaper at all. and he's not a very fast, straight end, line to line speed guy. And I would want more of that. And he doesn't need to be as strong as Marcus in that case. Mm-hmm. And so I hate to keep comparing this player to Smart, but because he was the guy who started in this slot for so long, and also a guy who I would like back still. Like, I'm not just giving him away already in the offseason. Like, oh, there's one report that Houston's really going to go after him. It's just like, I get it. He may end up in Houston, but I'm not just abandoning the idea that he could be back in LA. And maybe that's foolish of me. Maybe the deal's already signed.
Sure. That was kind of how I read Wyke's report, is it was sort of like insider code for like, this is already done, but maybe I'm reading too much into that. We don't need to really go over like whether or not that's the case. But I think in a perfect world, Marcus would be a backup to the more athletic player that you're talking about. But Marcus's presence, you know, alongside Luka and Austin, look at their numbers last year. Like, they were a fantastic trio, at least during the regular season. And sadly, we didn't get to see that in the playoffs. So I want to go to sort of a list of the type of players that we're talking about here. And at the guard spot, I've got it segmented out into three different categories. One is players who guard the ball for a living. That's the main thing that they do. And I'm totally with you on the idea of two-way play, where we can't have guys who guard the ball only and really are an offensive liability, just as we can't have them as a defensive liability. But these are the seven guys to me that I think are available to one degree or another that guard people for a living. And that's Jalen Suggs, Lu Dort, who we'll find out if his team option is exercised today, Max Christie, as a starter, is borderline, Marcus, Kelly Oubre, Christian Brown, and Herb Jones. Then there's the second layer of guys who have, I think, a good amount of defensive talent and that they can do this, but they bring a little more to the table offensively, and these guys are going to be more expensive. And that's DeJounte Murray, Derek White, and Benedict Mathurin. Now, Mathurin's sort of out of left field. Stein and I think Zach Lowe had mentioned that they'd heard the Clippers might be operating as an under-the-cap team, in which they would likely have to renounce Mathurin there, which made my next snap like, oh, absolutely go after Mathurin. I love me some Benedict Mathurin. And then the last category is just two players of like, I don't think they'd be great fits as starters because they're pretty much the offense forward type of players that don't bring much on the defensive end, but they are pretty good on offense. And that's Norm Powell and Quentin Grimes. So your reaction to sort of that framework, just that list of guys that I just gave you?
I like that list of players. Just to make a point on Mathurin, I noted him in a column that went up at Silver Screen and Roll over the weekend, just citing that reporting. Stein and Jake Fisher, who have been tag teaming on Stein's newsletter. And just quick plug to Mark Stein really quickly. He's churning out content with his Substack. And if you're not going to subscribe all year round to some of these guys, like, I get it. This is the time of year where I subscribe to Mark Stein for sure. Stein had mentioned it as he's heard they could operate as a cap space team. And Zach Lowe literally said on his podcast, I was talking to someone who would know, who said that the Clippers were behaving as a team who would have cap space. And the only way they get to significant cap space, which is like, I think $22 million for them, is like the most that they can get to. That would require them renouncing rights on Mathurin and John Collins.
Could they get there by trading Kawhi to a team that has a little bit of space?
They could, but the salary matching, they would need to actually send him to a team that had either enough cap space to take half of his salary.
Right.
And this was before the Kawhi reporting had come out. That's like a whole other branch of this tree with the Clippers. But they would be renouncing, essentially, their players who they have free agent rights on, and then also declining team options on the players who they have team options on, which are Bogdanović, Brook Lopez, and Nicholas Batum. Mathurin's an interesting name to me. These guys are more wings than guards, Pete, but it's an interesting idea.
I've got a separate list of, he's on the list of forwards that play next to Luka. So we're going to get to him and others in a moment. And I do want to talk about also like how these guys can be acquired of that list that I just gave, right? I think you've got your salary dumps, you've got your trades, and then you've got your free agents. In the pecking order of that, it's interesting between the free agents and the salary dumps, like Do you trade for Christian Brown if they're sending back a first and maybe some other capital or just a first? I probably wouldn't do that. DeJounte Murray is another guy that I think the Pelicans would want to get out of that has some talent and is a bit of a reclamation project that's got two-way talent. If you're expecting him to be like your main point of attack defender, I think you're going to be disappointed. But I also think that he provides a level of offensive juice that between the three of them, he'd be an interesting add that you could also get some capital back in terms of draft assets or other players and whatnot. Then you've got your free agents that, you know, don't cost a thing. We'll find out if Dort will be a free agent or on a team option. You've got other guys. To me, Jalen Suggs is a guy that if Orlando wants to make moves, they've got to move somebody of their, they've got four guys they pay $30 million plus. They'd have to move one of those guys to sort of make any room on their roster. And either Franz, Paolo, or Suggs, I think, are the option there. Derek White is another guy. But these are guys that are making in the low 30s. Very good players, though. These are legit starting twos that would be, you know, on paper, good fits. I know White's getting older and had a bad playoffs, but really good player, both of them. So how do you sort of evaluate that, right, between the salary dumps, the free agents, and then, hey, you got to give up something for Herb Jones, for example?
Let's take a break here, Pete. When we come back, let's dive into that. Yeah, Pete, so I agree with you that there should be some sort of hierarchy in terms of how the Lakers are going about their business. If they're going to be a cap space team, one of the things that I value first and foremost is who are the free agents who you can get for nothing in a market where there's not a lot of money out there beyond teams' mid-level exceptions. One of the things I sent you yesterday was that with Ayton opting in, if the Lakers were to renounce every other free agent on their roster besides Austin, who we know they're not renouncing because they're going to come to a deal with him, and Jackson Hayes, whose cap hold is about $4.5 million, with Ayton opting in and Marcus Smart opting out, the Lakers could have about $52-ish million in cap space. The mid-level exception is about $15 million. So in theory, the Lakers could offer three players $17 million contracts and say like, hey, we could pay you a little bit more than the mid-level exception and maybe secure your services, whereas another team only can offer the MLE. And I'm very interested in the idea of the Lakers diligently exploring the market and seeing where they can maybe gain value in that sort of landscape. And so to me, I would want to explore the free agent market first before I explored being like a way station for a good player who may net me an additional asset, but maybe is sort of like in this in-between space or overpaid relative to what they can provide, which is why their team would be trying to trade them in the first place. That's sort of where I'm at. And then the last level is good players who I need to give something up for. And using both cap space and draft capital, to me, that's like the lowest level of where you're probably getting the best players, but you're burning the candle at both ends. You're really emptying your treasure chest of assets the fastest in those examples.
Do you prioritize the five spot more than you prioritize this?
You know, that's a good question because it's sort of a chicken and the egg idea to me. A part of me has thought about the idea of the Lakers center play could look drastically better in an environment where their like guards and wings are like truly upgraded, where they have more talent and athleticism and more defense at those spots than they have in the past. One of the allures of a player like Walker Kessler, for example, is, oh, well, he can help erase some of the challenges that you're going to have defensively. And I get with Luka and Austin, those things are real to a certain degree already. So yes and no, but you'd have to be really good on the wing in those cases for me to diminish how important I think a center is.
Yeah, for me, it's like an all else being equal. The center spot is certainly more important than this is. That said, the Lakers also have to be wise. If there aren't those fives available, and we're going to find out very soon, I don't think just sending everything out for the best one that you can get might not be the wisest option. You know, it might be better to do the best you can at the five spot and then get the best wings that you can. So this Lakers team, especially if Marcus is going out, and we don't know that, but like it's such a blank slate that it can finish in so many different places that I don't want to rule that idea out of investing more in the wing than the big man spot.
Let's get back to your list of names, Pete. Who from that list intrigues you the most? Or would you feel like, I see it by adding this guy?
Okay, so I'll give you three names on here. Again, I like Murray just because I think that he can provide a level of offensive juice while being capable as a defender. I'm curious how much we switch and all of that. I think that he's due for like a reclamation type of season, a bounce back type of season. Mathurin would be my number one guy if he's a free agent because he's 23 years old. He guards enough. He was the third guy behind Nesmith and Nembhard in Indiana in terms of on-ball defender responsibilities. He could really put the ball in the bucket and is super athletic and, 23 years old? And we'd go to the free throw line just a ridiculous amount if we had Luka, Mathurin, and Austin. So I think he'd be my number one. Murray is probably my number two just because I think you could get something back for him, and I think he'd be good for us. And then if we're going the cheaper route of athletic guy that's not going to cost you anything. Again, I think Kelly Oubre has become fairly underrated. He had a good shooting season from a three-point range, which has not been the case in other seasons. He shot 36% and thought he did a great job on Jaylen Brown in the playoffs and their upset victory over Boston. And so if you're going to be, not spending a ton of money, but you want to have that guy who can run the floor with Luka, can be a lob threat, just provides a little more above the rim length and all of that, like he'd be the third guy there. Are there other names on there or any reaction to those guys?
I like your take on Mathurin, especially. I don't think he's the sexiest name. I honestly think there's probably a contingent of Lakers fans that would be like, I don't think he's the right sort of player to target. I very much align myself with where you are. I think he's young. I think he's athletic. I think that he's proven he can play in a playoff rotation on a team that has championship aspirations and has reached the finals before. I don't know what he would make on the open market, but again, there's like not a lot of teams that have a lot of outright cap space. And I think if you were to sort of say, we have a starting slot for you, that could be very enticing to him. So I really like the idea of Mathurin. DeJounte is an interesting name. I think he's overpaid.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the things I would worry about in trying to trade for Murray, would the Lakers then need to give up some of their own tradable salary in a deal like that in order to get him to offset some of the money?
Yeah, I think trading Vando in that would be part of the extra compensation that you could get in terms of getting him. Like, we take more of your bad money, but for a more useful player, you take Vando, and it sort of evens it out a little bit more. But I agree that if you're taking on, he makes $32 million, I believe, you've got to get some relief somewhere else, or else you're going to run out of money for that big man spot and the other needs.
Yeah, DeJounte is 32-7. The other name you mentioned earlier was Suggs. I thought Suggs would have been much more viable before Orlando made a coaching change and they waived Jonathan Isaac. And it seems like they're really trying to zero in on this being their roster.
This is one overriding thing that's been on my mind that's a huge source of anxiety to me, is none of these are situations that the Lakers control. Hell yeah, I'd love to have Benedict Mathurin, but he'd have to be renounced by the Clippers. Like, we've heard a couple reports that maybe they're moving that way, but the Lakers don't have control of any of these names in particular. And so, like, we could talk about them all we want, but if the team wants to keep them, like, that's the end of the story.
Quentin Grimes is a very interesting name to me, too. He's not known as a defensive player, and he's sort of been a bench guy, odd man out in many of the places that he's played. He's a very good catch and shoot player. He has some on-ball juice. He's a better athlete than what he's thought to be. He can finish above the rim. He can play in transition. And he does have defensive tools. And in the playoffs this past year for Philly, I saw him getting after it defensively in a playoff environment. Is that the thing he's best at? No, it's not. But do I think that he can be a part of a capable defense? Yes. Now, I would want Grimes as the level of player where I would want him backed up by a really good defensive big, whereas I could argue a player like Dort, for example, would be a guy where I'm just like, well, actually, you may not need as good of a defensive center if Dort is if players like Dort are out there containing the ball. And this is the sort of chicken and the egg argument that I was making earlier. I think Grimes requires protection, but he's a guy, Pete, that in an environment where I think the Lakers have sort of underperformed their offensive talent in terms of how high their ranking is, I think Grimes is a very interesting like slot between players piece where it's just like you have him as a third option on the court at times. You're going to be super dangerous offensively.
Absolutely. Very talented player. My concern obviously is the defensive end. I don't think that you can go three players in a row, regardless of who the guy behind them is, without having a guy who just plays defense for a living. But with both Grimes and Norm Powell, I would view them sort of as Rui's replacement, as the main bucket getter off of the bench, which I think is a very necessary role. So let's go to break here. Want to come back, talk about the list of forwards. All right, D, so just at the beginning of this conversation, I want to put LeBron and Rui to the side. Some of the common names that we hear are Peyton Watson, Tari Eason, Cam Johnson is probably available in a salary dump type of trade. Aaron Gordon is a possibility, I think, but I don't think would be a, you know, you get assets attached with him type of thing. Very, very high-level player I think they'd like to keep. PJ Washington, you know, we'd see what would happen if Dallas would trade with us. Trey Murphy III has been a common name that's out there. Other names on my list are Derek Jones Jr. Clippers don't really trade with us that much, but Wiggins just opted out and then looks like he's going to re-sign for 3 years with Miami. Then DeAndre Hunter, Keegan Murray, possibly. John Collins is a bigger type of forward that we've talked about. Just where are you at in terms of that forward that plays next to Luka?
Yeah, this is a more interesting discussion, Pete, because two of the best names on the market are the two guys you started the segment saying, I'm going to put these guys to the side. So I guess this depends on like who Luke is going to guard on any given night. And one of the important factors to me is this player needs to have enough defensive versatility where he could guard the forward that Luka doesn't guard. This is, to me, also like another argument for Mathurin. There was a player you didn't mention who's Jonathan Kuminga. Kuminga's on a team option with the Hawks. I don't expect the Hawks to necessarily just renounce him or to decline his team option. They're not in apron trouble. But there had been rumors or whispers that they might be looking to trade Kuminga. The Hawks also just guaranteed Buddy Hield's contract. Jake Fisher then reported that he's heard that Hield's name has been coming up in possible trade discussions. And so Kuminga's an interesting name to keep an eye on within the context of like the Hawks maybe trying to make a larger deal. He's like Mathurin to me, but I like him less in this way. But he is like a rangy sort of big forward who is athletic and has some defensive chops. He's just not shown like the attentiveness and the ability to sort of lock in. But in the playoff environments that he's been in, both in Golden State and in Atlanta, he's been able to hang.
Yeah, there's never going to be a game where Kuminga is not athletic enough to keep up with the pace of the game or anything like that. For me, though, like with the issues that you brought up, like, I don't know, I'd rather just have Rui.
Sure.
I don't know.
That's fair. The point I will make about a player like Kuminga, and I think this applies to Mathurin as well, which is a bit of a demerit to Rui, but Rui tops these players as a shooter, is how much do you value like on-ball juice from this position? This is why Wiggins now is going to stay seemingly with Miami. But one of the things that made Wiggins so important, I would argue, to Golden State was that he was fine as an off-ball player who could take and make spotted up threes. And he was a very good defensive player who had defensive versatility. But he was also a guy that at the end of a shot clock or in a broken down situation, he had former number one overall pick, top option, offensive like chops ingrained in him. Now, what is that what he's best at? No. And that's why he ultimately got slotted as a role player. But the ability to create something out of nothing from one of these spots is valuable, even if that's not his job on this specific team. And that's where I would argue a player like Rui falls short a little bit in that well, he's not necessarily going to keep the blender going with his dribble drive attack, quick decision making as a passer, but he's also not a guy that's just like, okay, shot clock's running down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm at the top of the key, can I get you something? And so I'm wondering, does that matter to you within the context of like this other forward spot next to Luka? Or are you looking for more of an archetype of a guy that's just like, well, no, let me lock in defensively, let me rebound, let me be a connecting player?
Yeah, this player has to bring a decent amount to the table on the defensive end. They don't have to be that's all they do or that's the main, you know, job that they have, but they have to, especially from the low man spot. That's been something that in one of the things that I like least about the Luka LeBron combo at the forward spot has been our low man play for, in terms of being able to help on the boards or get to the top of the restricted area and help as a help shot blocker, right? Especially on a team that switches as much as they do. And that's why I want to get more thoughts on a guy. I was talking to our guy, Jason Timp, the other day, and he's talking to me more into Peyton Watson. I'm curious your thoughts on him. He's a guy who shot, I think, 50% on open catch and shoot threes this season. He is less of a point of attack guy and more of a, I can help on shot blocking and can contribute a little bit on the boards. Does have a degree of on-ball juice that he showed in a fairly limited sample. And this is part of my nervousness of, he had like a really good 17-game stretch and you want to pay him $30 million, but he's 23 years old, kind of a forward version of Mathurin in a lot of ways that if the team's going to switch a decent amount, I think he can hang on the perimeter in ways that a lot of guys like that can, but sort of an athlete next to Luka that can win those aerial battles. I think that's super important. And that is an argument for Kuminga, but you got to have the awareness to be able to read those situations in the first place. And so I do think Watson is more of that ilk. I'm curious your thoughts on him.
I haven't watched enough of him to have, oh yeah, I really want him for these exact reasons. When I've heard others talk about Watson, they have highlighted more the fact that he scales down as a defender rather than scaling up. And this is an interesting idea within the context of a team that would potentially switch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If he does end up on the perimeter, he can sit in a stance and contain and use his athletic tools and his length and his size to be a more disruptive defender. My concern is, though, is that if that's where he's maybe better or what he's geared to do, is he going to be that physical presence on the back line who can be a guy who's going to like contest and challenge and block shots? I do think he has the requisite defensive range, which is another idea that I think is critical in this player. I know that you talked about low man rotations. LeBron and Luka, for example, will help on the glass in this way, and Luka will step up and take a charge. LeBron did that more in previous seasons than he has the last year and a half, I would say. But those guys in a playoff environment, I do expect them to make those plays more. Watson is an interesting guy to me in that the restricted free agency idea that you brought up earlier and like what that means to you being able to get a guy, this is where I'm like, oh man, is it going to cost you with the timing and like the overpay and the like, are you actually going to be able to get him? I don't envision a sign and trade with Denver, for example, working out. And so you're going to have to give them the big offer sheet and hope that they don't match. And so I'd love to get him. He's the guy that he would be honestly at the top of my list if he was unrestricted. The fact that he's restricted makes it more challenging. But I like the gambit on him, even though I do feel like, whoa, man, like a 20-game sample or whatever. Like, are the Lakers ready to pay for that?
Yeah, absolutely. But in the context of the other names that I mentioned, who knows who's actually available, right? We do our best to sort of read the tea leaves, and there's always players that are like, oh, I didn't realize that player was on the market. So who knows? But I got to say, the list of guards that I read off, I liked more than the list of forwards that we read off here. And so I think that gives him a boost. And then the ranginess point, I really want to emphasize, that's like sort of what square footage do you cover? And even including up in the air, right? And so Watson is going to get out to three-point shooters faster than Luka or LeBron would, and is going to get a running jump and kind of, you know, compete 11, 12 feet above the hoop more than those guys are. And I think that matters a lot. But yeah, the list of forwards there, it's just not particularly inspiring.
Let's say it doesn't work out with LeBron. Let's keep him to the side for a second. Would you be, I don't want to call it disappointed, but how would you feel if the solution was Rui? in this case. Mm-hmm. Everything you just said was like, I want this guy to have a certain amount of defensive utility and he's got to be good enough on the defensive side. That's not Rui's game necessarily. But there were stretches throughout the year, particularly when LeBron was unavailable, where Rui mm-hmm. stepped in with Austin and Luka and then a good defensive perimeter player slotted and then Ayton. And those units were good. They played really well during the regular season. I think there's a playoff question with those groups, but Rui's been here a long time and we know how he plays with these guys. Would you feel like, oh, okay, I like Rui, but, or would you be like, hey, yeah, I see it?
I like Rui, but I think there's a playoff cap on that. I think Rui on a championship team is your main bucket getter off of the bench in a lot of ways. But if you're talking about Rui being, you gotta close with him. He's gotta be part of the closing five. I think you've got foot speed issues. I think you've got square footage issues in terms of competing in the air, getting out to shooters, rotating on defense, that it's part of the reason why I think we just are at such a foot speed deficit. Is if it was Luka or Rui on the perimeter and then the other guy was faster, I think that you could put a defense together that was fast enough, but we know what the choice is between Luka and Rui, right? And so I think that's why I framed the question as I did of, you have certain requirements of that other forward position. In Dallas, that was Derek Jones Jr. as one of the main on-ball defenders, and he's a forward, right? But also PJ Washington, that I think those are the types of players that you need to be able to really accentuate Luka defensively.
That's totally fair. And Washington's an interesting name, too. I know that we didn't talk about him a bunch. I think he is available via trade. The Lakers did trade with the Mavs, Pete, multiple times on draft night, interestingly enough, in much smaller deals. I don't know what it would take to get Washington out of Dallas, but we know that he fits with Luka. We know that he's a good player. We know that he's going to sort of raise his level defensively and can make enough shots. He too has a little bit of on-ball juice. He's sort of like a more realized version of Peyton Watson, if that makes sense. Like, Watson's younger. He has potential. Washington is sort of that guy now to a certain degree. But I think that you're right in that the guards or more wing-based players are just a more diverse and sort of tantalizing group of players that you would want.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, again, we'll see who's actually available. All right. Free agency starts tomorrow. We will be back with one more pod because that starts at 3 p.m. Pacific. So we'll have one more pod out before that, sort of previewing all of it. And then we get to it. We are finally here. I cannot wait for all of this to get resolved. So until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One. Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes!
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.